and the panelists said, oh, that's because, you know, the survey was too long, the survey was too repetitive, I got tired of it. So I think that's one side of the story, but I can't help but to ask, like, but why? Why did it feel repetitive, right? Why did it feel long?
This is Real Talk, the customer insights show with Jen Vogel, a top-rated live stream and podcast in the market research and insights industry. We stream live on LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, and you can listen on all major podcast channels. Join Jen and her guests for a weekly discussion around topics that will help you understand your customers better. Real Talk is presented to you by Vox Pop Me, the leader in video research and ranked number one in qualitative research by Grit 2 years running. Here's today's conversation.
Hello, insights professionals, marketers, and everyone who wants to understand their customers better. I'm your host, Jen Vogel. Representative data is such an important topic in the industry, and there's a lot of things we need to think about when it comes to getting reliable survey results. Some people don't finish surveys for one reason or another, but what can and should we do when that happens? I'm joined by Corinne Pepin, Vice President at 2CV, to discuss the topic. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So excited to talk about this. I know you said to me before, like, I don't know, you know, how much could we say about this kind of very small niche part of the conversation, but there's actually a lot to talk about.
I know, right? I was kind of surprised when people were interested on this on the, you know, when I posted on LinkedIn. So that forced me to think about this a little bit more. And there's actually a lot to say about it.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to dig in. And maybe just to kick us off briefly, tell us about your career and insights and why nobody loves surveys as much as you do, as you say on LinkedIn.
Well, let's start with the fun part. Why nobody loves surveys as much as I do. You know, it's hard to explain without sounding like a completely crazy person, but a few months ago, I guess in December, I signed up to be a panelist on panels. And so I would say like that my day is probably 10 hours of either creating surveys or analyzing surveys or filling out surveys. And it's hard to describe why this is so fun, but I guess part of it is there's some sort of a, you know, surprise component. I guess you don't know if you're gonna qualify, you don't know what the survey is going to be about. So every time it's a little fun. And then I guess it's just satisfying. Like it makes you feel accomplished to finish, you know, a survey. Yeah, I don't know if that sounds a bit crazy to you, but that totally makes sense to me.
No, it doesn't sound crazy. And I think, you know, I don't know if you find this, but I think being in the industry, like I look at surveys as a consumer a bit differently probably than people who aren't in the industry do. So I'm always like, you know, I don't think I take surveys quite as much as you do, but every so often I do. And I'm always looking at it with a critical eye of like, you know, this question is worded poorly, or, you know, this experience isn't as good as it could be, or I'm checking the links to see who created it. And, you know, just probably looking at things that most people don't look at.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, sometimes you see things from a different perspective when you fill out your surveys that are not yours, you know, because sure, you test your own surveys or sometimes your colleagues' surveys, but you know the questions, you know, that are coming up and they make sense to you. When you fill out somebody else's survey, it's very different, you know, and I've actually learned a lot through this process about like what we're putting panelists through sometimes and how we can improve our own surveys.
I mean, that's such a critical point. Like we have to be thinking about improving the survey experience for respondents and what better way. I think, you know, that's not unique to surveys, just in product development or, you know, any industry going through the motions that your customers are going to be going through, experiencing it the way they're going to be experiencing it. It's so important to make sure you're identifying those friction points and trying to do it from a place of, you know, not knowing what's going to happen next, you know, try to remove it from your mind.
Or, you know, even when you start a new project, I think it's always important to try your client's product, right? Or their competitors, because then you have a better sense of like the benefits of the product and the needs that it actually fulfills. And I think you make better surveys if you've experienced the product yourself.
Oh, I totally agree. That's such a good tip too, especially if you're on the agency side, or maybe you're a, you know, a consultant or something, to really like get entrenched with the products. I hear a lot of, you know, on brand side, when new people come on board on leadership team, they're, you know, taken around to different stores to try products or, yeah, you know, different things like that. And it's a great tip to, if you're on the, you know, partner side of things, to be doing that for your customers as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about incomplete surveys. What are there different types of incompletions? Like, which types are most common? Tell me what you're seeing.
So I think there are people dropping off at various points in the survey. The main place where people drop off, and you might be surprised, but it's actually on the landing page. We get so many people who drop off there. And, you know, after taking so many surveys, I can't say that I'm surprised, because 90% of the landing pages out there are just not that engaging. You know, there'll be just like a lot of text about confidentiality, not using the back button and instructions like this. Or my favorite is actually when they explain that if you don't finish the survey, you can come back. But, you know, after you've been put through like 20 minutes of routing, there's no way you can actually go back to this survey unless you like bookmark it or something. And I don't think anyone does that. So I think there's a lot of information people don't read anyway. And it's just not a very nice, like, welcome to the survey. So that's the first place where we see a lot of drop off. Then when people are passed through this, good for them. We tend to see like some questions that might be more problematic, but usually they're pretty committed, but they could be like a question that's especially painful, you know, a long grid, for example, or something that feels very repetitive. And that's why it's like so important to keep an eye on this when you're in field, not just on your overall conversion, but on where exactly people are dropping off. Because I think we're sometimes in this mindset that, okay, we had a Word document, it's been programmed, there's nothing we can do about it, now we're in field. And that's not true. Like, if it's bad, you can always change it, right? It's not like you've just launched a shuttle here. If you did launch a shuttle, then I don't know. I think it's probably hard to bring back. But if you realize while you're in field that there's a question that doesn't work, it's just better to address it as soon as possible, because I'll tell you this, it's only going to get worse from there. It's not going to get any better. So I think that's important, just to keep an eye on this. And then we have people that just kind of drop off at various points too, because of survey fatigue, for example. You know, people complain about questionnaire length. I mean, the reality is that the, you know, some surveys can be 10 minutes long, but in reality, we have segmentation, we have coin joint analysis, we have shopper journeys, and these questionnaires are just going to be longer, right? So I think it's just something we have to be mindful of, but also find other tricks to keep people engaged. That's not really the answer, is not always short in the survey.
Yeah, that's such an important point. And as you're talking, I'm thinking like, how many people are out there actually kind of reviewing the survey journey? You know, we think about all the user researchers out there that are doing user testing and journey mapping and watching people go through a product journey or an experience with a digital tool or something like that. Like, are we doing that as an industry? Are we doing that with our surveys and analyzing, oh, here's a point of friction, or here's a point that we need to improve the experience? Or, you know, are we just kind of like, finding out on the fly, like, uh-oh, I'm not getting the people that I want to get. Can we actually be measuring that better?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. I think I've attended some webinars where some panels have started doing something like this, and that's really interesting. I think there needs to be some sort of shift, though, because we seem to have been focusing in the past on like question by question, right? Like, oh, let's gamify this question. I mean, that's great. Like, I'm not mad at it, but it's not about one question. It's about an end-to-end experience. And I think we have to think more about, you know, it that way. And it just kind of dawned on me when I was, you know, reflecting on what we've done in the industry in the past few years, is we've put so much emphasis on reporting, right? Like story-driven reports that are visually engaging, that are insightful, or like these online dashboards, right? For example, for monitoring your data that also have a really great user experience now. And then at the, like the very beginning of this process, like our proposals are also looking much better, you know, and much more sort of insightful as opposed to being just more about the methodology. But like surveys have kind of been forgotten in between all this. Like what happened to improving the actual survey? I don't think we've done a lot because, I mean, if you think about online research in the past 15 years, the surveys haven't really changed, right? And I think we need to think about more holistically, not just, you know, let's gamify this question, which is a great thing, but it's not the whole experience. You know, like if you read a book, for example, you're not focusing on one chapter at a time, you're focusing on the whole book, right? To make it good and engaging.
Yeah. And if the first chapter is no good, you're not going to get to that really good sixth chapter, right?
Because it turns out you do judge a book by its cover.
That's right. Yeah. Or a survey by its landing page in this case.
I know, exactly. So I've been thinking about how, you know, if we manage to storify our reports, why don't we storify our surveys, right? What does that look like? How do you create an experience for the participants where they look forward to the next screen, right? The next page. What does that look like? Is that, and I mean, it's kind of like a theoretical framework at this point, but whenever I design surveys now, I'm thinking of it through that lens. Like, how do we make this more engaging, like throughout, right? Like the landing page is obviously just a given, but could we use illustration? Could we obviously have a more conversational tone that it's like you're talking to a human? You know, sometimes I fill out these surveys and I'm like, oh my God, this is not supposed to be a car rental agreement. You know, like just talk to me like a normal person, please. And I have a rule now is that my question has to be one sentence. It has to fit in one line in Word. And if it doesn't, then I just go back and I try to reword it, remove words, make it shorter, because you know people are just skimming through anyway. So that's very important. And then the other thing is that sense of progression, I guess. That would be part of like how do you storify is that, you know, in a book, you show a table of contents. Like, you know how many pages you've read, you know how many pages are left. And in a survey, you have a progress bar sometimes. They're not very nice, like they're pretty dry and really not that engaging. But also they're not very good at predicting what is coming up next because people might skip a bunch of questions and then the progress bar is not accurate. So instead of this progress bar, can we show a path? Can we just make this more like a table of contents or like, you know, if this is all about having a conversational tone, well, then let's make it feel like a conversation where you show the respect to the panelists of showing them what we're going to be talking about today. And nothing is really a surprise, right? Like first you're going to talk about brands and then you're going to talk about how they research them. And then you might want feedback on some ideas they have, but it feels a lot more, I guess, just like you're having a normal conversation with someone.
And I think that like you just said, the key word is respect. Like having respect for the respondents that are putting in time to give you the feedback. Like we wouldn't be able to do what we do without those people. And I think it's really easy to forget there's real people there and we really actually do care about their opinions and their behaviors. Mm. And actually demonstrating that through the survey is really important. I, as I mentioned, I don't take a ton of surveys, but I did take one recently. And I took it because I was at the SMR conference and it came through my email and I was feeling very, you know, researchy at the moment. And, you know, at the end, there was an open-ended text box kind of asking, you know, anything you want to tell us or whatever. And my feedback for the survey was like, it's very clear you don't actually care what I think. You know, you've got very specific questions that you want me to answer here, and they have nothing to do with me. You know, they have everything to do with you. And that was sort of my like feedback for that survey. It was even like the question wording and the way it, like they didn't do any like make any effort to like butter me up and tell me how important my opinion was to them, right? Like I think that's, you know, it sounds silly, but I think it's important to say like, you know, we're doing this. So we're not trying to like waste 10 minutes of your time for no reason. Like we really do care. And this is how we're going to use the information or whatever it might be, but actually like taking them through that story and having a conversation, being human, showing that respect and not just it being sort of tick box of, you know, I need a bunch of stuff from you is sort of how it came across.
Yeah. No, I think there's definitely been a lot of talk in the industry in the past year. I think, you know, we have more panelists that are actually on panels at conferences and are talking about their experience. So there's a transition happening, but at the same time, we have the tools that we have, right? And these tools sort of have to change. Like, for example, okay, I want to storify surveys. Okay, that's a great idea. But how do I do this? Well, I'm using the survey platform that I'm using. You know, it's a mainstream platform. It's the most popular platform. And it's just very difficult to customize. You know, why isn't like out of the box experience of this platform just better? So I think this will happen. But now like we kind of run into all like not only, okay, let's define what the experience should be like, but then do we have the tools to actually make it happen? You know, I'm not a programmer. So this is also challenging.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there have been some, you know, tech platforms that have come out that are really more about exactly that, more engaging surveys, but there's a trade-off. There's always a trade-off. You know, they might not have all the functionality or the, I guess that's a good question, actually. You know, how important is the engagement of the survey and maybe a simpler survey versus something that's like complex, has all the functionality that you need? I mean, as you're talking about like, oh, these long grids or these very repetitive questions, like, you know, a lot of those more sort of gamified survey tools, they don't have that, those capabilities. But is that the problem anyways? Is it that we've overcomplicated?
Well, I don't know. So I think my experience with these nice platform, and I have come across these nice platform, but I would say it's like 0.1% of the surveys that I get as a panelist that are beautiful. Like, and it's hard to describe what a beautiful survey is, but you know when you see it, like you do. You know, it's like the perfect shades of grays and the way that you click on the button is so satisfying. So I have come across these platforms, but they tend to be very specialized in one thing, right? Like you want to do concept tests, you want to do this. And on the agency side, I can't have a subscription to every single beautiful platform out there for specific needs. You know, I need to have that platform that also does CoinJoint, right? I support CoinJoint exercises, support lease fields, support like these kind of thing that these platforms don't necessarily have. So I don't know how we, come up with like one platform that does everything and looks beautiful. But it seems like if the starting point is the mainstream platform that everybody uses, the only problem is they're not beautiful, then just make them beautiful. That seems like the easiest route.
Yeah, that's a quick win, right? There's certainly more we can do to make them engaging and you know, you could, it's also very easy to take something beautiful and still make it not engaging. So there's a lot of thought that needs to go into it. But to your point, I mean, we're putting that effort into better storytelling, better proposals. Like, you know, the thinking is there, the creativity is there. It's just a focus on improving that respondent experience. And, you know, how does that, like, if we're not focusing on that, how is that impacting data quality, reliability? Like if we're losing, you know, a portion of our respondents midway through the survey, like, you know, what are we doing to accommodate for that on the back end? Or, you know, think about, you know, what that means to the actual survey results.
Well, I think we've never really had to think about this so much because, you know, and I'm sure you would remember, but back in the day, I remember doing these surveys that were like 25 minutes long, 8,000 respondents, the data looked great. You know, why would I want to keep partial data? Like this just not even occurred to me. It's just recently because it's so much more difficult to field studies, especially with harder quotas or longer surveys or you know, whatnot. under normal circumstances, I don't want to use partial data personally. But if you've been in field for like 2 weeks and the completes are just trickling in and like, no, maybe it's a good candidate, you know, to think about that. But I think when we think about who's dropping off, for example, it's hard to tell because they've dropped off. So it's not like you talk to them. But actually in that webinar yesterday that I was watching from Dynata, they had interviewed panelists and the panelists said, oh, that's because, you know, the survey was too long. The survey was too repetitive. I got tired of it. So I think that's one side of the story, but I can't help but to ask like, but why? Why did it feel repetitive, right? Why did it feel long? And we've done a bit of analysis, I guess, on past data, just to see if we could, beyond saying like, oh, the survey was too long, like, can we really understand why they dropped off? So we looked at two studies. One was a video game study with people who play a specific video game. And what we found is that the people that dropped off from that study were less likely to play the game. So obviously they were less engaged with the topic. Then the second study we looked at was consumer electronic purchase, people that had just purchased like a PC. And the people that dropped off from this study were people that had purchased for someone else and had joint decision-making, but we were not the sole decision-maker. So what this tells me is that the people who dropped off were also less engaged with the topic. So, I mean, sample size of two, but you know, that's what we have. But I think like, why is it repetitive and why is it long? It's because people are not as engaged with the topic. And I think when, like we talk a lot about survey engagement, we don't talk a lot about targeting. I think like targeting is super important. And if you target the right people, so if you use, for example, these companies that target through LinkedIn, you know, based on people's profile, these people are like the perfect fit for your study because they've been handpicked, right? They've been targeted really well. And then what you see with these studies is that the conversion is super high. It's super high because people qualify. Obviously, they're the right people that you recruited, but it's super high because people don't drop off. And like, you know, you can do a 25 minutes long survey with these people and the drop off is still really low. And that's because they're interested and also they're getting a pretty good incentive for doing this. But I think it's too easy to say long surveys, that's why people drop off. Like, who are we excluding? I think we kind of just need to go one level higher here and think, well, why is it repetitive and why does it feel long? Well, maybe because you're not the perfect person for this study.
Mm. Or, I mean, along those same lines, you've just learned something really valuable about that segment just from the fact that they didn't respond to the remaining questions. You know, it's not even their answers that are important at that point. It's the fact that they didn't answer them. And I think that's really interesting to analyze that cohort to find that common thread of who are the people that dropped off? What does that mean for our research? Is that something that we incorporate into the findings in some way? Or if that cohort maybe is the most important cohort that we needed to learn from, then we would need to take a different tact. But understanding that's like analyzing your survey data, but also analyzing your survey. Trying to figure out who those people are. I think that's a really interesting approach.
Yeah. And then I think, you know, if you think about a consumer electronic purchase, for example, well, the people that are less engaged might be the people that are more price driven. And maybe you want to know about this as well, or the people that don't want to continue playing your game, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think another key point that you brought up is incentives. You know, right. We have to incentivize people properly. I think that this combined with what you're talking about is like a major industry issue that if we don't solve it in the next, I don't know, couple of years, we're not going to have any people to survey anymore. It's not a, you know, gone are the days of like 25 cent incentives for 25 minute surveys. Like we just, I think the incentive structure hasn't changed much, certainly in the years that I've been in the industry. Mm-hmm. And it needs to. I mean, look at the economy, look at the society we live in. You know, there's mm-hmm. inflation. We need to be inflating our incentives. And there's also like a lot of different ways that people can earn side cash that maybe didn't exist 10 years ago. So
why would they? Whatever, right? Like all these things you can monetize now.
Right. You know, why would I choose to take a survey for a dollar if I could, you know, pick somebody up in an Uber and I don't know how much money that would make in one trip, but you know what I mean? Like, I think it's something we definitely have to account for. And maybe that's part of the solution of, you know, you find this cohort, it's somebody you really care about, but they're not completing the surveys. Maybe the incentive's not high enough. Maybe the incentive isn't monetary at all, but there's some kind of, you know, what's driving them, what's motivating them to participate. And clearly mm-hmm. we missed it the first time. So what can we do to really capture their feedback the next time around?
Yeah, I think, you know, I agree about the incentives. I mean, it's gone down. Like the CPIs have gone down in the past 10 years, right?
Yeah.
But I think what's another really important thing, and that's actually the most important thing, I think the most important challenge this industry have, is to validate the identity of people, right? Like, because I think if you're going to increase the incentive, you're going to increase the fraud. So before you do that, I think we need to find like a way to validate people's identity. There's no way around this. And, you know, not just on the B2B side, but on the consumer side as well.
Oh, completely. There, I just mentioned I was at the SMR Congress a few weeks ago, and I believe it was Innovate did a presentation, and I think the content is out on the internet somewhere too. You guys can find it. But they actually interviewed fraudulent panelists and asked them how they did it, why they did it, like super fascinating stuff to kind of see. You know, it's actually really easy to you know, fraud the surveys. And there are some good companies out there that are helping to get, you know, kick out bots and identify, you know, there's, it's still the same old tactics of the red herring questions and, you know, speeding and stuff like that, but it's becoming more and more and more of a challenge to get, ensure that you're getting high quality people and validating, you know, who they are. So, I mean, what are some of the ways that you're doing that now?
Validating people, I guess on the B2B side, it's using these companies that recruit through LinkedIn and means like that. But yeah, you need to be ready to pay a CPI for this, right? And I think there is a solution on the B2B side. It's just the extent to which people are willing to pay for this. I think on the consumer side, it's still not, we still haven't figured it out. And to be honest, the red herring questions, all of that we have in surveys are really good for inattentive respondents. I don't know how effective they are if someone's job is to go through your survey like 600 times in a day, right? They will find a way in eventually, right? It's a numbers game. So I think for that kind of fraud, we really need the technology here to help us out. I don't think there's anything you can do in the survey itself to do this. And I think like in terms of validating people, I think that needs to be done at a panel level as well. I don't know that like we can all researcher individually try to validate people in each and every one of our surveys. And I can just imagine how annoying this would be for panelists too, because they are already complaining that there's too many of these red herring questions, right? There's the pre-screeners before getting in the survey, then there's all this stuff in the survey. And then you multiply that by, I don't know how many surveys they can take a day or attempt to take a survey, because you're not necessarily going to qualify for it. Mm-hmm. But I think we need solutions that are more at a higher level. You know, if we're still going through the routers and all of that, like we need to consolidate some of this cleaning because it's a really poor experience for people as well.
Yeah, that's such a great point. You can't overcomplicate and make the survey you know, not engaging because you're trying to catch fraud. There's other ways we can do that through the different tech that's out there. And I think it's really, you make a really interesting point about where are you sourcing the sample from? You know, and that sourcing something from LinkedIn, you know, you're not going to a sort of traditional panel to find a B2B sample. It's more accurate to get it from LinkedIn. There may be other methods. I know there are some companies out there that really specialize in social media recruiting. And, you know, I think that gets mixed feedback from the industry, but it's an attempt to improve on the quality that we're seeing.
Yeah, I think the mobile panels also could be a way, because if you link to a smartphone, I mean, I'm sure that's not bulletproof either. You know, if you really want to cheat the system, you'll figure it out. But at least you have some sort of behavioral data on people. You're like, okay, well, does this phone ever leave the house? You know? So at least that helps. Like, it's kind of baby step. I don't think we really know. We're just trying all these different solutions and seeing what is best going to work. And then what's scary is that maybe by the time we figure this out, the fraudsters would have figured out a way to get around it, you know? So we'll just need to go on to the next idea.
It's so true. They're always a step ahead of us. But I think, you know, we're seeing a lot of, you know, we certainly see on our side and our customers, like, this move to being agile and iterative and trying different things and, you know, experimenting. Like, we need to do that on the partner side of things as well. Like, you know, try different things and experiment and make recommendations and make improvements on the experiences that respondents are having, that our customers are having, get better data quality. Because if we don't solve for that, then, like I said, we're not going to have any survey results to share. And that's going to be a big problem for the industry.
It's, you know, a sample has been sort of treated as a commodity, but it's actually our bread and butter. We actually really need this. You know, even if I was complaining 10 years ago about having to aggregate myself, you know, SSI to Luna and research now, and then, like, there was no, okay, how do I duplicate IPs and stuff? That was some much better data than, like, now it's just all about quantity, right? Like, not so much quality. So, so that, I think that that's a really big challenge for the industry.
Yeah, for sure. Well, from now on, we're going to solve it. That's what I'm getting from this conversation. We've got it all figured out.
No, I think there's a lot of people thinking about this now, at least, you know, from conferences that I've seen and webinars, there's definitely a lot of thinking going into this problem, which is more than just a year ago. So I think this is going to get better. It can only get better from here.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. There's a lot of different directions we can go. Like, no shortage of good ideas and different approaches we can take. I think the mobile panel thing is an interesting call out, you know. I mean, it's we talk about mobile surveys in the industry way too much, like, you know, which is not what we're talking about here, right? It's like, you know, tell me more about, I guess, what you're thinking in terms of mobile panel.
Well, you know, mobile surveys are kind of a hygiene factor, right? Like, I think at least 50% of our respondents come through mobile. And it's always one of the important things that people point out about survey engagement, that it has to be mobile friendly. It's like, well, sure, that's kind of just a hygiene factor to me. What I mean by mobile panel, and, you know, they've existed for a while. It's not a new idea. But it's panels that are mobile first, like you can only sign up through your mobile device, right? And I'm assuming they verify your mobile device, sending you a code or something. But I think the benefit of this is that they know you're a real person because you leave your house. And then they have all this behavioral data on you, so you could do much, much better, like hyper-targeting, I think, that they call. You can also do videos and things like that. But, you know, you'd be surprised how many people rely on videos. You know, that also seemed like a lot of people are talking about, oh, put a video in your survey, and then this is like, you're not going to get any fraud. Well, maybe it helps, but there's people lying on videos as well. So it's not a sort of silver bullet either.
For sure. I think, you know, obviously we're, you know, that's our bread and butter is video. And so we see, you know, it really is dependent on how well you ask your questions and your screeners mm-hmm. and things like that. You know, if you put in a screening question and say, hey, do you own a jet ski? Everybody's going to say yes. And then they're going to yeah. lie to you whether they're on video or not. Right. So you have to ask your questions in the right way and be able to, you know, try to weed that stuff out. I think the one thing it does do is it helps to ensure, you know, the person is the right demographics that you filtered mm-hmm. for, that they're actually like, you know, a real person and not a bot. You know, a bot cannot do a video survey, which is a huge advantage, especially with all the bot traffic that we're seeing in quant right now. So, you know, it's really about how, like, you know, proper targeting, like you said, like making sure you actually have, like, where are you sourcing these people from? Do you know they made that purchase? Or are you relying on, you know, people who are motivated by an incentive? Mm-hmm. So as long as you're, you know, you think about the methodology and are careful with your question wording, it's certainly a lot higher quality. I think one thing that's been interesting that I've seen people doing recently is actually for panel recruitment, doing video interviews. So not at the survey stage, but actually at the recruitment stage of panels yeah. and communities to kind of say, you know, you have to participate in this video question in order to get into this, you know, maybe micro community or a niche kind of group. And so that's another interesting way to kind of ensure that you're getting the right people in from the start. And then you have to, you know, rely on them to be truthful in their answers in the surveys later.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea to be doing something like that. Or I know some panels send a check, a physical check, you know, as the first incentive, so that it kind of verifies that they are, like, they have an address. So I think that really needs to happen more often. I guess it's all about the trade-off, right? Like, you're not going to get the volume if you're so careful about everybody that gets into your panel, but I think it pays off at the end, you know, to trade off the quality for the quantity, or the quantity for the quality. Yeah.
I know exactly. Totally, totally. I'd rather have, you know, 25 of the right responses than 100 of the wrong ones. So
I know, exactly. Yeah. And I think it's also going to be a bit of a change because, you know, like 15 years ago, when the CPIs were a lot more, the sample sizes were also smaller, right? You would think more, well, do I really need 2,000? Why? Mm-hmm. But now, because it's gotten so cheap, the sample size have gotten really big. So if we're kind of like swimming, like going back, you know, the other way, then the CPIs are going to increase. So unless the budget increase, then we're just going to have to compromise on sample sizes. It's just all about trade-offs.
For sure. Yeah. And I think as the industry moves to be more agile, you know, it's less about, you know, 100% perfection and more about the ability to keep moving and keep asking more questions and being more iterative. So, you know, I think it's less of a requirement to have, you know, 2,000 people answer a 45-minute survey. It's like, maybe you just need 200 people to answer this 5-minute survey, and then another 200 and another 200. Like, you know, if you're doing it in a faster and more iterative way, then it's cumulative, right? It adds up over time and it gets you kind of maybe more of what you need versus having a disengaging, long, cheap survey.
Yeah, I think it's how granular the quotas get, right? This is why sometimes you end up with really large sample sizes, because you want to do the age group by gender, by people who have blue eyes, and also do this, right? Mm-hmm. So then, but that's the question, is do you need that kind of granularity, you know? And because we can do it. Like, people, I think, are not necessarily thinking about, do I really need this? But they're more like, well, why not?
Sure. Yeah. That makes sense. Well, this has been awesome. I mean, who knew we could talk for 45 minutes about this topic, just like you said.
I mean, there's a lot to unpack, right? It just started with partial data. But yeah, but just the fact that we have to think about it means that there's so much other stuff going on.
There really is. Yeah. And we could go down a lot more rabbit holes, but yeah, I really appreciate your perspective on this. And there's a lot more to think about, more to talk about. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks everyone for joining us today. We'll talk with Ekaterina Howard in our next episode next week. We'll see you then.